Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
While attending RAMS 2017, we enjoyed conversations with friends, colleagues, and listeners of the show. Here is one of those conversations. In this episode of Speaking of Reliability, please join Adam Barrett and Anne-Marie Neufelder in conversation.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with Anne-Marie Neufelder. Hi, Anne-Marie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. We're here at the RAMS conference, and I was actually very excited to come across an opportunity to meet you because I recently purchased your book for a software reliability class I was co-developing with somebody. And Anne-Marie is the founder of Softrel, which is a company that provides consulting training and tools, and her book is Effective Application of Software Tools Failure Modes Effects Analysis. So I wanted to invite you to the podcast because we were having a really good conversation yesterday, and I thought it would be one of those nice topics that our, you know, our listeners might enjoy. And our conversation started with my question of how would you break out, and the word cleave I brought, I mentioned because you said you liked it, because I've used it before, especially with failure modes effects analysis, but cleave, you know, break out in the major sections with developing reliable software. What are, if you were to put in ranking order, the things that have some of the biggest effect?
Well, today's software systems are well over a million and sometimes multi-million lines of code. So the chances of you being able to apply the FMEA to all of that code is pretty close to zero. In fact, sometimes being able to cover 5% of it is quite an effort. So the first thing you have to cleave is what's risky, what's not, what's safety critical, what's not, mission critical and not. And that's your first cleave, is let's cut out what doesn't need a FMEA. Then the second cleave is, okay, there's 8 different ways of looking at the software. You can look at the requirements, the design, the interface design, the code, changes to the code, usability, and vulnerability. And at any given time, usually only one or two of those things really applies. You know, if you have new code, the functional FMEA applies. If you have old code, the maintenance FMEA applies. So that's your next cleave, is how are we going to look at the software? Then after that, the next cleave is what are the failure modes that are most likely to be pertinent for our system? In my book, I have identified 400 failure modes and root causes that apply to any system. These are relevant to any system, but are they likely to occur on all systems? No, they're relevant. Not all of them are going to apply to your system. So your next cleave is let's sort out the most common failure modes. And what I've found, the best way to do that is to review old failure modes and root causes, let's say from the last release or from the last project. Usually there's only maybe 1 to 2 dozen that you really need to look at. And so for example, if you have a really stateful system, state's going to be a failure mode you need to look at. If you have real-time software, timing is going to be part of it. And so that's your final cleave. And then from there, you're actually ready to start doing the FMEA. The problem is a lot of people they jump into the FMEA, and they don't take those 4 cleaves first.
Yeah, that's actually, and you know, a lot of my work is mechanical and electromechanical, and the things you're describing are exactly parallel with those, you know, same challenges, where getting people to first correctly break the system and cleave it, where they want to start with like a bill of materials, and that doesn't make sense. That's not going to bring you to this idea of, you know, being able to hypothetically think of different failure modes and, you know, break them down, and to encourage them to break it down by function is such a big part of it.
Yes.
And then I always find the second part is being the output of the DFMEA, making sure that that has direct actionable components that you can connect back in, because so many get done and filed away.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you do to ensure that the output of it directly affects the development process? Like, how do you ensure that link happens?
You know what? That might be the zero cleave, the pre-step to the other cleaves, in that, what do you want to get out of this?
Yeah.
is, you know, what I have found is when it's done early, the thing you want to get out of is a good set of requirements that doesn't get everything off the wrong track.
Yeah.
If you're doing the FMEA during development, your goal is let's make sure that we're still on track.
Yeah.
And it's almost always to update the design.
Yeah.
That's your goal. If you're doing it at the very end, which a lot of people unfortunately do, they wait until the software is really done.
Yeah.
At that point, your only real focus is let's figure out what's going to affect the next release, and let's figure out what will affect the service manuals and the user manuals.
Yeah.
And then actually the step before that is it can be used to develop your test plan.
Yes. Yeah.
So you have to decide your goal up front. What are we trying to do? And once you've identified that, then the output is whatever document applies to that point in time.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's almost like they realize they didn't check off the box for DFME at the end of the project. Like, oh, we didn't check off that box.
Right.
Let's get it done. And it's like, oh, I think you're kind of missing the point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that's really the first thing is when people are told to do FMEA, it tends to be not quite so valuable.
Right.
When they do it because they have a goal, it tends to be exceedingly valuable.
Right, right. So. Yeah, it's such a big part of it. A lot of times I've framed it as, you know, why doesn't everybody just frame this as, you know, also a project management tool? Because that is one of the outputs, is that you're getting this really nice descending order of from highest risk to lowest risk. And in effect, it's helping you direct resource, right?
Exactly.
Where should we be spending our time and energy? And if you can frame it like that, you start to get some engagement from the people who are the project managers and management pushing it because they want that to come out of it because it directly helps them. And now there's, you know, a little bit more of this kind of energy coming from different directions.
Exactly. I have been through requirements reviews, design reviews, and code reviews. And I told people, half jokingly, I'd rather have my liver removed without anesthesia.
Yeah.
But what I found is when people do a light FMEA during the requirements review, it goes so much faster.
Yeah.
It's so much more valuable. People can sit and look at a requirements document all along and say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. But when they apply the FMEA process to it, they realize, oh, there's a lot wrong with it.
Yeah.
So, and software people love that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I actually once a customer, it's a brand name everybody would recognize, you know, huge company, and I was doing training for them, and, you know, I said, you know, guys, you know, I see a lot of opportunity for DFMEA, and there was this change in aura, the aura in the room changed where they're like, well, we've been doing them. This one we've been doing has gone on for about 8 months now. We do about, you know, 3 meetings a month on or whatever. And they're like, you know, we're kind of stopping because we're kind of feeling, and they said, traumatized. I was like, oh my God. I felt like giving, I was like, all right, do you need a hug? Like, should we start with a hug? Just to kind of like, it's okay. It's going to be okay. And, you know, to see that, you know, they just didn't get it. They thought it was something that you just kept doing. And that somehow at the end, you know, it was the value would all of a sudden magically happen at the end. So I told him, I said, no, you need a good facilitator. For what we're talking about here, I say we frame it to 6 hours. Let's do 3 2-hour sessions. Don't ever do a session longer than 2 hours. People just, you're just diminishing returns. Just after about an hour and a half, it goes off a cliff, you know? And it's, you know, it's like, you just need to do like 3 2-hour sessions and the value should be coming out the whole time. You should be seeing as you're doing the line items, things that people want to act on, and it should come back. And they're like, how can you do it in such a short time frame? And I say, well, one, a good facilitator would have you, would stop certain conversations and say, guys, this is an offline conversation for you two to have and bring back what you discussed next time. Don't drag everybody else through it. And, you know, there's a few simple things like that that can really keep it on target.
Yeah, engineers, when they start talking, all of a sudden, it just, the conversation just goes in a million directions, and you're right. And the facilitator has to be a type A personality as well.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done talking about that. Let's move on.
Exactly. Yeah, without it, exactly, absolutely. And one of the things with software that's so interesting compared to electromechanical is the fact that with a lot of the reliability of electromechanical, it's the probability of what percentage of the population is not going to do what it's supposed to do. And with software, it's perfectly exactly the same code going everywhere. So it's not a factor. What you're looking for is the factors and variabilities of usage discovering the defects that weren't found in testing.
Right.
And I always think it's so interesting that that turns so much of it to the good reliability practices are in the development practices and the people. And you and I were actually talking about that yesterday, and you said something that you said when I asked you what was one of the most significant factors with regard to people's development practices, and you said it was physical proximity to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really interesting. So I wanted to ask you more about that.
Well, the failure modes for software are all 100% due to some development activity. There's no wear out or anything else. So 100% of them are somewhere along the line related to the requirements, design, the code, and the changes to the code, and the usability.
Yeah.
And that's, so to answer your question, software systems today are far too large for people to work in a vacuum. Anyone who thinks they can, they're dead wrong. I mean, there's so much data that when software engineers take the vacuum approach, things just don't turn out. But the bigger problem is software engineers like the vacuum approach. They don't want to talk to other people. That's not what they're good at. If they were, they'd be doing something else. So trying to get them out of their vacuum is hard enough as it is.
Yeah.
When you have them working from home or physically located separately, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to call each other out and start talking every day. That ain't going to happen.
Right.
So it's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the things when you said it, you were like, the number one thing is them, being geographically close to each other and interacting socially. I'm like, wow, that's the wrong population.
Yes, exactly.
I was like, holy cow, what a hurdle, right? Like, they mostly went into that so nobody would bother them.
Right.
And they could just,
You have to make it easy for them to get together. And so when they do get together, it shouldn't be an adversarial type of meeting. It needs to be more of a constructive meeting. And like you said, an hour and a half tops.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually interesting too, because then it turns to, helping their management facilitate that. And it's actually funny. I just, I was just talking with somebody that I had hired back when I was developing a group at a company. And we immediately turned to this Nerf gun war that I started because we had just, our reliability department had just been merged with the systems department going from R&D. And I was one of the managers, and there was me and another manager, and she was the, driving the whole system side, and I loved working with her. And I was like, all right, how do we get our two groups to really kind of join? We've moved them to where they sit near each other, but they still kind of just talk to each other. And I was like, we need silliness. We need silliness. Because I remember reading a book a long while back. It was How to Improve Creativity 1,000%. And it was really about people playing games. Because that's how, even as children, that's how we bond with each other and learn and figure out rules and stuff. So what I did was I bought, I think it was 34 Nerf guns. And I taped them to the bottom of everybody's desk early in the morning. And I brought a violin case. And I put one in there, and I said, guys, we have to have a meeting. And everybody was like, I acted really serious. Like, we have to have a meeting. We're having a stand-up just in our area and whatever. And people were like, some people come in, they're like, what's going on? Is it all right? They thought I was going to say we're doing cutbacks or whatever. And I pulled out the violin case, and they were like, what? And I opened it out, and I pulled out a gun. I said, everybody has a gun taped under their desk. I highly recommend you go get it right now. And we had the most fantastic, Nerf gun war, jumping over cubicles and the reason we were talking about it was we set up video cameras all around the video, and he said that they just recently found the video file and we're looking at it again. So here we are years and years later still talking about that.
Right.
And it changed, because right away people had something to talk about with each other. You remember
that
or whatever, and other departments were jealous, they were kind of like, wow, what are you guys doing? And we're like, we were like sweaty, like actual like sweaty by the end of it, shirts untucked and... it's that kind of thing. And it was acknowledging that, and it did set us, on a different path, which was, really.
Yeah, software people aren't really good at starting conversations, so I think you need a Nerf gun war. There.
Exactly. Yeah, there's something to be said for when your coworkers shoot you. You kind of, all of a sudden it's on, right? it's gonna be a much deeper, engagement. So that's really great. So what, if you were to give a single point of advice for, other than to purchase your book, which is really great. And it's kind of funny, but like I said, I was really excited. I was pleased to see you're here and get to meet you, because it ended up, as we were doing searches on, you know, sources for, you know, yours came up. But what's something you would, you know, you would advise somebody, you know, if there is, let's say, somebody who's a director or VP level and looking to improve this, what's one of the first things you think they should do right now?
Well, I think they're the more effective when you do them before the code's written.
Yep.
That's probably the single most important thing. And the second thing is, a lot of people think that it's a one-person activity, that
yep.
someone can do the entire for me. That's almost never true.
Yep.
The people who do the failure mode analysis are going to be the software people.
Yep.
And the people who do the effects are going to be systems people.
Yep.
That's how it works. So I would say the two of them together is do them early and don't plan on it being a one-person activity.
That's great. Well, good. Well, Anne-Marie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this, and it's great. I'm excited for this episode to come out to share it with you know, with other people and people we're working with software.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.